This ministry is supported by the members and friends of First Unitarian Church of Des Moines. If you would like to support future podcasts, go to www.ucdsm.org to make your contribution.
I'm sitting in the minister's office, waiting to discuss my future. I'm 26 years old, and I've got this sense of a vocational call, a sense of the work to which I want to dedicate my life. There was no lightning bolt epiphany, no dream conversation with God. And while I had my doubts, I couldn't shake the feeling that I had discovered something. I had discovered a calling to the Unitarian Universalist ministry as a second career. And this left me with a big question on my hands. What was my first career going to be? I had had various jobs, but nothing that could be called a career. And of course, I could not go directly into ministry. Clearly, I had to have this other first career experience first, where I just got a lot of experience in everything. And clearly, I needed to also find someone to marry and to have kids first, because that would make me wise about life. And clearly, I was way too young. The young ministers I had met seemed like the Doogie Howser genius types, and that wasn't me. I wasn't even sure exactly what I believed. But I did feel this pull towards ministry. And on some level, it felt like what I was made for. And at the same time, I felt entirely unequipped to actually do anything, that ministerial, besides perhaps shaking hands after the services. Hence, the need to discover my first career, so I sat, waiting to speak with a minister, hoping for some guidance. Back in 900 BCE, in the ancient Near East of the Bible, another young person in his 20s was also hoping for some guidance. But this guy needed guidance on a whole different level than my first career, second career ponderings. Solomon had to deal with the enormous responsibility of becoming the third king of Israel. And things had not gone very well with his first two predecessors. The reign of the first king, Saul, was a mess. And then came Solomon's father, David, who had great promise, but who missed the mark in so many ways. And then Solomon found himself in charge of his people. And quite understandably, he was terrified. Yet we see wisdom in his response to his own fears. The story goes that God appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream and said, "Ask me for whatever you want me to give you." And Solomon didn't pretend that he'd had it all figured out. He didn't say, "Nah, God, it's cool. I got this. Thanks anyway." No, Solomon admitted that he was very young, he was inexperienced, and he had no idea what he was doing. But he did not ask to be rescued. He did not ask to be relieved of his position. Instead, Solomon requested a discerning heart. At least that's how it's translated in the version of the Bible that we heard this morning. The Hebrew words that Solomon wished for translate literally in Hebrew are lev shomea. And the translation is a listening heart. Solomon was confronted with a job description that would make most people run crying in the other direction, and he asked for a listening heart. In the ancient Hebrew of Solomon's time, different parts of the body symbolized different feelings, just like they do today. So, for example, the nose represented anger. You can think of flaring nostrils like an angry bull. The right arm meant strength, And the heart was not just associated with love and emotions. The heart was where the will lived, where intention lived. The heart was a center of strength. And Solomon asked for a listening heart. He asked that the home of his will, the home of his intention, his strongest feelings be open, listening, and receptive. And to me, this is the ultimate prayer of discernment. A prayer asking that the center of our will, the center of our intention, just quiet down and listen. Listen for the melody of authenticity and right living amid the cacophony of the day to day, showing us our role in the greater order of things. But to be receptive, we first need to wake up. And as you may have noticed, it is very easy. It's perhaps the easiest thing to just sleepwalk through our days, plodding along, carefully constructing a life that looks like what we've been told it's supposed to look like. And we hear that we're too young, we're too old, we're too big, we're too loud. Maybe we back off. We spend enormous energy accommodating the messages that we really should be married or partnered or have kids or get this type of education or present this kind of gender identity or act more like someone of our race or ethnicity should act, but not too much. And we could easily spend all of our time and money, all of our lives, making ourselves as easy to digest as possible. And surely someone is making a lot of money off of us staying in our place and playing our roles. And so we expend all of this energy in service to what? In service to what? What would it look like to set aside the scripts that have been handed to you and to yield, to surrender to what calls you? Annie Dillard offered us a picture of this in our reading this morning. She says, "The thing is to stalk your calling in a certain skilled and supple way, to locate the most tender and live spot and plug into that pulse. This is a yielding, it's not a fighting. A weasel doesn't attack anything. A weasel lives as he's meant to, yielding at every moment to the perfect freedom of single necessity. I think it would be well and proper and obedient and pure to grasp your one necessity and not let it go, to dangle from it limp wherever it takes you. And then even death, where you're going no matter how you live, cannot you part. Seize it and let it seize you up aloft." What do you love so deeply? What calls you so fundamentally that you would be obeying your true nature to seize it and let it seize you up aloft? This isn't asking how to maximize your happiness or what you do for work. This isn't quite asking, what are you willing to die for, but instead, what are you living for? Or to put it in Annie Dillard's terms, what is the eagle to your weasel? Out of everything you can see, out on the expansive landscape of your life, which things do you choose to stubbornly attach to commit yourself to, until your very bones unhinge and scatter over the field and woods? In your dying moments, what would you look back on and feel glad that you hung on for the whole ride? This is the question that came to Rabbi Zusia in his dreams. We heard from Rabbi Zusia at the very beginning of the service. Zusia realized that in the end, the measure of a life well lived was not how much it looked like someone else's life well lived. Even Moses or Joshua. In the end, the measure of a life well lived is the degree to which you have responded to the call to share your gifts and authentically show up with compassion, generosity, and strength in the ways that you uniquely can. In that moment back in the minister's office when I had discovered my second career, this is what I was on the cusp of realizing. The fact that following my call didn't mean that my ministry would have to look like someone else's ministry. And lucky for me, the minister I had sought out reminded me that I wasn't expected to know what I believed or what exactly my ministry would look like. And in fact, that is what 4 years of seminary are for. And that my youth was not just a liability to be tolerated or waited out. It could be an asset in that I could potentially spend decades deepening my skills and better serving our people and our religious movement. He reminded me of the greater process. I wasn't going to turn around to discover a fully matured, well-articulated vocation just sitting there and waiting for me. Responding to what calls us and discerning our next steps is a dance that takes place in the tension between two very different modes. It asks us to dwell in the tension between the receptive listening heart of King Solomon and the tenacious, unrelenting grasp of the weasel. In this dance, this interplay between nuance and boldness, between receptivity and zealous pursuit, in this dance is where we learn to live into the life we are meant to live. This is the tension into which creativity and possibility are born. So I've posed a lot of questions here this morning, and it is so much easier to pose questions than it is to grapple with them, or even more intimidating to dare to answer them. But I've sat with these questions and imagined my own legacy, imagined the eagles that I want to go to my grave holding on to. And these were the pieces that felt clear. I am called to spend my life fiercely loving my family and loving friends into family and loving strangers into friends. I'm called to spend my life turning people toward each other, engaging in practices that reveal our shared human experience in such a way that we might save each other's lives through gestures great and small, and feel awe and wonder at this amazing life we share. And as a white person in this time and place when systemic racism lives in our policing, in our criminal justice system, and in the very fabric of our communities, I am called to do more listening and less talking. I'm called to listen to and believe the lived experiences of people of color and to skillfully and strategically use my privilege in service to justice. And if I am going to do these things as myself and no other, I will use my enthusiasm, my curiosity, my voice, my love of people, and I will do it in community, and I will find the joy in it. I will find ways to multiply joy. If I looked back on my life and I saw that these were the eagles that I clung to, I could say that I was not Moses or Joshua or Zusia, but that I had been Elaine. Every day we are offered 1,000 opportunities to conform, to consume, to tune out, and to turn away from the eagle that is calling our true self. Every day we find another, every day we place another small tile in the mosaic of our legacy. with receptive and listening hearts and with a tenacious weasel grasp. Let us seize what calls us and let it seize us up aloft. May it be so, and amen.